Where was Billion Dollar Babies recorded at?
Well, that's a great question. We had actually the man since we had found new success with Killer, we wanted to come closer to New York. So in early 1972, we moved to Greenwich, Connecticut. We wanted to move to New York, like Westchester, one of the suburbs of New York City in Manhattan. But at that time, there was no income tax in Connecticut, so the accountant said, you guys are moving to Connecticut.
Okay.
And so that's how we got to Greenwich, Connecticut, which was, the real estate business now, and the most expensive, you see people knock down houses and build a new house. Well, the most expensive one that I know of was a $26 million knockdown in Greenwich.
Wow.
A couple of years ago. So, that's the kind of real estate you're talking about. And 30 years ago, it wasn't as much, but still, it was still some of the most expensive real estate in the company, in the world. So we were sort of living in an area, which was great because nobody really cared that we were there. Any place else we would go, we'd be recognized, and it just, that was all part of it. But it was really a nice place to come home to because, no matter where you were, most of the people around us had more money than we did.
Uh-huh.
And we had a lot of money. So we had made that move right before school's out. And so the reason I mention that is because after school's out, with Elected on, we had brought the mobile unit from. We recorded Schools Out pretty much in at the record plant now in New York. So we had moved from the studios in Chicago for Love to Death and Killer over to New York for Schools Out, and the record plant in New York also had a mobile unit, pretty sophisticated for the time. So we rolled it up. I mean, it was a thing that was as huge as a semi truck, and rolled it up and parked it in the driveway at our mansion, and it's still one of the biggest houses I ever saw, the one we lived in. And for the Billion Dollar Baby show, we had the whole ballroom in the house. It was like a small auditorium. We put the whole stage in there. I mean, it was like a 40 or 50 foot ceiling.
That so place
more
is...
than enough room for the stage and to be set up with the lights and everything. And there was a fireplace big enough you could drive a Volkswagen into.
Is that place still, is that close to where you're at now?
Yeah, but it burned down right after we left.
Really?
And that's another story, too. But the point I'm making is that we recorded a lot of the basic tracks for Billion Dollar Babies in our home at the mansion in Greenwich. And so when you see something that was recorded at the Cooper Mansion, that indicates that we had recorded it there. We took them into New York, the record plant, to finish them off with vocals and what have you. But then we also did some recording at Morgan Studios in London, late 1972. We took everything over there and we finished up some tracks. And while we were on tour in Europe, we needed one more song for the album, and we were on tour in Europe. And we were recording, so we were based out of London, and so we said, "Well, we got to get away for a couple of days. We really have to clear our heads and go someplace." So we flew down to the Canary Islands, and there was a new hotel that was built, and they hadn't finished the top of it yet. Matter of fact, they hadn't had anybody live in there, so we made arrangements that we took over the hotel just ourselves, and then we on the top floor. They had a couple of empty rooms, and like I said, nobody lived in there. So we took just enough instruments, and we wrote. We were sort of having a little writer's block, and we couldn't come up with a song. And then I just started going brum dum dum dum, a beat, and it ended up being Generation Landslide, which is one of my two favorite songs of all eight albums that we did. My two favorite songs is My Stars and Generation Landslide.
Did you write lyrics for that also?
Pardon me?
Did you write lyrics for that also?
Generation Landslide?
Yeah.
I wrote a couple of lyrics in that one. It was a group song because once I started the beat, then Mike came in with the chords and Alice came in with the lyrics and everybody else just joined in with the arrangement. And it was a true, collaboration that just, that song appeared because the five of us got together and just started jamming. So we went back. Yeah, we went back up to Morgan Studios, recorded it, and finished the album. And then it was released in early '73 before the Billion Dollar Baby tour.
And then you did Muscle of Love, the final album you did with them after that.
Yeah, that was right after the Billion Dollar Baby tour. Yeah, we did Muscle of Love. Then back out to Los Angeles, I forget the name of the studio, we recorded it out there. And Bob Ezrin was sort of having some personal problems at the time, so he wasn't able to produce the album. And Jack Richardson came back in, who had, you know, had basically sort of sat in during Love It to Death and Killer by School's Out. Bob Ezrin totally handled it himself. And so Bob single-handedly did School's Out and Billion Dollar Babies, and we went back out to Los Angeles to record Muscle of Love. And then Jack Douglas, who had done all the early Aerosmith recordings, he came in and he produced the album with Jack Douglas, with Jack Richardson. So it was Jack Richardson, Jack Douglas Studios in Los Angeles, and we recorded Muscle of Love. And there's actually a lot of songs I liked on Muscle of Love.
How come this lineup never did a live album?
Well, we recorded in during the Billion Dollar Baby tour in Dallas in the spring of '73. We did some multi track recording for the movie Good to See You Again, Alice Cooper, and there was footage of the concert as well that you know sort of. The goofy that movie sort of bothered me too, because that was really off base. I don't even know, and that's where problems were coming with the band. But the point is that there was a multi-track recording that was done,
and that was during the Billion Dollar Babies tour.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, a new mix of Billion Dollar Babies was just new master of Billion Dollar Babies was just released with a CD, with a bonus CD that is some of the live material from that concert. So that's the only live footage that was really multi-track recorded that we ever did.
That's kind of surprising, considering the tours and the big shows that you guys did during that big stretch.
Well, it is and it isn't, because we set that up ourselves. So we had, I mean, you know, we were playing, you know, we just didn't equate the two. I know a lot of bands did, and I don't know. It was just one of those things that we were more concerned about studio albums than actually recording a live album. And, you know, eventually we might have. Eventually, you know, who knows? Maybe we still will someday. But, but it was just one of those things that was the only time it happened. Thank goodness it did, because that CD that was released is 2-3 years ago now. It's great. And believe me, when I went back to because it was a mobile unit that was brought in Dallas to record that, I went back to hear the tapes afterwards, and the drums sounded terrible. And I'm going, is this ever going to sound good? And it sounded okay in the movie, but of course with the technology today, they remastered it and they remixed it, and it sounded great. For a live album back in 1973, it sounded really good.
So from the time Muscle of Love came out, what happened through that period that led to led to the lineup kind of breaking apart?
Well, after Muscle of Love, we went on the holiday tour, and there were some strange things that was happening. Now, you know, as far as the political makeup of the band and the way the band worked, it was always a democracy, and that was fine. And even back as early as I think Easy Action and Love It to Death, you know, when there was a press kit that came out, you know, there'd be pictures of the band, a band called Alice Cooper, and then there would be some individual pictures of Alice by himself, which we really frowned on that as a band, because we said this is like the Rolling Stones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and you know, the Rolling Stones, I mean, their singer's Mick Jagger, and I really equate the two bands very, very equally.
Okay.
And for what we did, as far as, you know, our fan base and our image, and up till about 1973 or 74, there was a 16 magazine that came out. Well, the good news was that 16 magazine came out and featured everybody in the band, but it had a story about Alice, and then it had a whole section about the four of us and called it the Alice Cooper Group. Well, this was not Alice Cooper's group, it never was. The band was called Alice Cooper, and then we started calling Vince Alice, and that's how it happened. And so, and that was fine, because whatever the public perception was, we didn't really care. But when it started to get, you know, personal with us, that in the inner circle, that anybody would start to, take the publicity seriously, that was a problem. And I mean, that was just, you know, sort of one thing that was uneasy. And the other thing is that, you know, we always created our own music, our own stage show and everything. And then when the movie Good to See You Again, Alice Cooper came around, you know, there were people writing this stuff. And other people had ideas. We said, where the hell did this come from? You know, this, and that's why the thing was a disaster, because it wasn't, you know, it was more of a comedy, and that Alice Cooper wasn't a comedy. I mean, we were pretty much a threat to society in those days.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm going, what, you know, where is this coming from? This is like lightening up, and I didn't want to lighten up. I wanted to get heavier, and so you know, between that and you know, some of the things that were happening. And I think another key element was that after School's Out, now we had recorded two albums. We'd recorded Love It to Death, and we'd recorded Billion Dollar Babies. The only thing Glenn did on that album, unfortunately, was smash a guitar. We had other musicians come in to play the leads. And then on Muscle of Love, he didn't play anything on Muscle of Love. So essentially, he had pretty much fallen off the wagon on being a creative element of the band. And Glenn was such an intricate part of the image of the band that one of the reasons we took the year off was to sort of Mike Bruce wanted to do a solo project after we came back from South America in '74, and so we decided as a group, you know, we had never really taken time to sort of enjoy the fruits of our labor. Let's just kick back, and then in a year we'd get back together again and record album number 9. And so we took the year off. Mike started working with the keyboard player that sat in with us, Bob Dolan, and the guitar player, Mick Mashburn, who sat on the Billion Dollar Baby Tour. Mick had also done some of the guitar work on Muscle of Love. And then Alice started working with Dick Wagner and Steve Hunter from, you know, that also did guitar work for us on the albums that Glenn didn't contribute on. And then I started working with a guitar player, and Dennis was helping me out with a solo project. That was my Platinum God project. So between these different things, and then Alice, and the deal was we were going to take the year off, record our solo albums, and then come back together and do Alice Cooper number 9. And with the success of Welcome to My Nightmare, Alice never came back to, you know, Warner Brothers was now suing us for an album. I mentioned that before, and Mike and Dennis and I got together and started recording some new songs. We said we had some songs for an album that became an album called Battle Axe that Mike and Dennis and I put together as a group called Billion Dollar Babies, and Alice wouldn't come back to record with us. So you know, I mean, we're still friends to this day. We'd just gone through a big lawsuit with Frank Zappa because of, you know, back in the early days, the transition from Straight Records to Warner Brothers, there was a discrepancy in publishing that was between our management and Zappa's management, which was a lawsuit that held a lot of royalties for a couple of years. And I didn't want to get... I said, you know what? No matter what lawsuit... I mean, first of all, every band's going to break up. It's just part of what happens with a band. And secondly of all, we're stopping at the top of our career. I mean, we just played a concert, one of our last concerts, for 125,000 people indoors. It held a record for 20 years. I mean, you know, I'd rather do that than, you know, 15, 20 years from now, trying to, you know, build a little gallows out of a chair in a clothesline in a small bar, you know, somewhere in Alabama, trying to do our show. You know what I mean?
Playing at Six Flags.
Yeah. You know, trying to, you know, like Spinal Tap, right? So, I always think that if you, you know, it's like any, I just think it's a class thing to do when a band or when a, you know, a sports person or in the entertainment business, you know, there's a time when, especially in sports, but, you know, there's a time when it's just, you know, it's going to happen. And I have to, I look back at what we did as a celebration of you know, five guys together that just really changed music forever in the country. But, you know, there's, you know, every guy's going to have a different story. And you know, I do have to say, in all fairness, that if my solo album would have ever been a hit, or Michael Bruce's solo album might have been a hit, or if Glenn or Dennis would have done one, it would have been, you know, who knows what would have happened. You know what I mean? So I can't blame Alice. I can't blame anybody. You know, Michael wanted to take the year off. Alice is when they had the hit record. And, you know, there were some things that, you know, we just, you know, we couldn't fire Glenn, and we couldn't work with him, and we just never resolved that issue.